You're listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. 0% financing for 84 months right now on the 2017 Chevrolet Silverado, plus up to 10 grand in price reductions. This may be the best deal on Silverados ever. Check it out, Lakewood Chev. Now we're hearing that on an upcoming card, the Edmonton Combative Sports Commission has a fighter on the card who, according to rules, is suspended from MMA, but suddenly he's in boxing. What is going on? Mike Russell joins us once again. Guy who's been all over the Edmonton Combative Sports Commission for many years for a lot of errors in their bylaws and everything else. You can check him out at Real Fight Stories. Mike, welcome back to the show, man. How you doing?
Doing okay, Jason. Another, we're meeting on bad terms again, but I think Edmonton's just going to go down as the laughing stock of combat sports regulation. There's a lot of people talking about all the things going on.
Now, I'm not as invested in it as and educated in it as you, but if you're suspended because of a mixed martial arts concussion, right, or a knockout, I should say, so many of them, does it not carry over to boxing? It's still combative sports both ways. Or is it the Edmonton Combative Sports Commission kind of say, well, no. If somehow you're KO'd or suspended in MMA, you can still box?
Well, it's universal that that's the rule. Any ABC commission will say that there's crossover. And that's why they're supposed to. The very first step in okaying any matchup is they're supposed to check with both ABC databases to make sure there are no suspensions. Because when they started with the MMA database, there were boxers that were trying to pull a lot of things on the regulators and trying to fight when they were suspended. So they're actually, I talked to the ABC president today, Mike Mazzulli. They've actually reached out to Edmonton to let them know that this isn't how rules are to be set, just because the safety implications. So you figure if you could pull it, you could get knocked out today in a boxing match and then fight tomorrow in an MMA match. That makes zero sense as far as medical oversight or as far as, common sense. It just doesn't make sense. But I think that was an excuse to cover up the fact that they did not suspend Tim Hecht. So, we've got this investigation coming. I'm told that behind the scenes, they had kind of an ace in the hole that they figured would exonerate them from any liability with the city. And this was a Pat Reed quote, was that he was not afraid of, and this is, I heard from a third party, so I will justify that, but I've heard it from more than one person, that he said that he had some information that would make Tim, it would paint Tim Hagg in a not too great light. And this was post him passing away. So it's come to light that information is that Tim Hagg was actually knocked out, I think, a couple months before this fight. And I think the insinuation is that he didn't declare it on his declaration. But I think that this latest move is just smoke, because we know from my reporting in the past, and we talked about it, we broke it on this show, that Tim shouldn't have been licensed. He shouldn't have been licensed at all because of all of the knockouts that he had. So this is kind of their alibi, I think, that would kind of brush away my evidence and would give them the ability to use that information about Tim getting knocked out in training. So, if it is, it's dirty pool, and I just don't agree with everybody who's handled this deck so far.
Okay, so I just got to be clear on that last point. So you're saying that they have information that Tim Hagg was knocked out in training a couple months prior. But would that in any way affect what should have been a no-go for his fights?
No, it shouldn't have. But they're trying to negate the no-go by saying that they've got this rule that nowhere else has, which is if you're knocked out in boxing, it doesn't really apply to MMA. But apparently behind the scenes today, there has been some talk with the Edmonton Commission between some of the parties that are concerned about this. And I will say that apparently they're softening their stance, because you read the article. Eric McGracken's probably one of the foremost experts in law when it comes to combat sports. He actually has helped me with my last story. He's helped me a bunch in the past. He's bang on with his part that he brought up from the bylaw that says, hey, it doesn't matter if it's boxing or MMA, a fighter is a fighter is a fighter. So now that they have that, I think the problem is the person in charge right now, David Aiken, his job has always been fielding complaints as a complaints officer. So he's a professional bylaw guy. He looks for loopholes in bylaws, and that's what he was doing. It was him that told the person who got the quote that this was basically he used a loophole to try to get out of it. That quote is from him. And he's the executive director. He's been named in Pat Reed's instead when he's been moved on to a different position, which I think is just so Reed doesn't get all of these media questions. Because really, in the bylaws, it says that the executive director is the only person that can make decisions on everything. Every decision that's made as far as licensing, safety, suspensions, they all go on the executive director's shoulders. And it can prove that he has no knowledge when he hired Reed, who the hiring committee said had zero business being an MMA regulator because he had no experience and no knowledge. And they had safety concerns and voted against it. He vetoed this. So my problem is the investigator. We've got the, I think it's MNP or MRP, whatever it is. They've chosen the investigative team, and it's an accounting firm. The problem with that is the same thing that happened with Ron Hader's complaint. I think it's we're going in on almost to the date. I think it was either 6 or 7 years to the date that was basically flubbed. They picked a company that they already had a business relationship with, not only the city, but also with the ECSC. So if this company came up and said, yes, all of these things on this complaint that you're accusing Pat Reed and the ECSC of are true, he's liable for all these things. There were a bunch of lawsuits at the time that have since been settled. Then they'd be admitting guilt. So all of these things that were asked in this survey were done, and they were done improperly. All of the answers that were given were wrong. So we're nearing in on this many years since this happened originally, and we've got the exact same thing happening. And the problem was it was around election season that this happened last time. So it got brushed under the rug. Things were allowed to happen, and then by the time everybody got back to it, there was nobody there to oversee it. And that's the problem that, you know, if council is their number one goal and job is to protect the citizens against the the corporation of Edmonton. If you break it down, they're a corporation. They're looking out for the corporation, the people that work there, not the citizens. And it's the job of council to look after the citizens. The interest of the citizens is a proper investigation. I don't know why you'd even bring anybody from Alberta in to do something like this, unless you're just not going to investigate it for what it was, which was a death and a wrongful death, in my opinion.
Mike Russell joins us from realfightstories.com. Now, Mike, I know you've been talking to the city a lot from this. What's been their response for you over the last few months, and why it's taken so long to finally come up with a third-party investigator? And I'm pretty sure you uncovered the fact that Aiken and Reed were part of the selection process, which to me looks like a blatant conflict of interest.
Absolutely. And that's their response has been to everybody that has asked, and I believe this was just a blanket PR response because I got it from everybody from PR all the way up to the mayor gave the same response in a bunch of interviews. And it was that we are taking our time to find the right person to do this review. In my opinion, and this is only my opinion, so take it for what it is, I think the reason why it took so long is because there were a lot of lawyers having to look at the legal angle of this, because let's be honest, this is a major liability case that could blow up in the city of Edmonton's face. So, you know, the thing that they've never answered is why was Pat Reed bumped out of his position? Was it because of complaints by people like us, or, you know, why? There was no real explanation, but he's still there. So he's either pulling the strings himself, or we've now gone from, you know, somebody that's really inept to somebody that's even more inept that may not, you know, he's the one that came up with this interpretation of the rule. So if he's that out to lunch on a simple interpretation that's a blatant safety concern, then what's going to happen, you know, when the same thing that happens with Pat Reed, when somebody says, can I take my gloves home overnight? Or, you know, can I overlook the fact that there's a blood test missing, which was what a fighter told me recently, was that Pat Reed offered for him to just overlook the fact that his opponent was missing one of the necessary blood tests on his medical forms. And he said, if you still want to go ahead with the fight, we'll let it go. And then in the meeting minutes for the following meeting, it was decided that they should ask around to see if they should get rid of that component of the blood test. So it was like he played rock, paper, scissors with someone's safety and someone's life. And he's done it time and time again. And that's, to me, that's the problem. And I talked to, like I said, Mike Mazzulli today, we were talking about it. And I said, my only concern here has always been the fair treatment of fighters and the safety throughout all of this. You know, people say you're pretty invested in it. Well, I haven't made a cent from it. I haven't benefited in any way other than, you know, things have changed. So I think that when you look at people that are stakeholders in this sport that aren't crying out and shaking their fist at this like we are, you wonder what their role in this is. And why aren't you You know, every MMA stakeholder has a vested interest in safety and fair treatment of fighters. And, you know, I think if those things are not being done by a certain commission, then that commission probably shouldn't really be a commission anymore. So, you know, whether that's a reshuffling or the province takes a hold or anything like that, I don't know what they're going to do. It's not my place to say that. I'm just saying that if I was a fighter or the parent of a fighter or the manager of a fighter or the coach of a fighter, I would be very reluctant to send anybody that was under my care or charge or that I cared for into Edmonton because of what we've seen the last few years.
All right, I want to go back into this investigation, you know, that I believe you still hasn't quite gotten there yet, but this might be just from a really simple person, but why not go to a boxing commission like in Baltimore or Louisiana or New York or something and say, we want someone there to come take a look at this? I mean, is that too simplistic? Someone else like a clear view on this?
There have been offers, and I know that there have been offers from other commissions, you know, former commissioners that have moved on from regulating that have said they will come back and help with it. There have been offers from everywhere, but the problem is I did an ABC poll when all of this first happened for my first story. I never put it in the story. I'm probably going to use it in my subsequent one that I'm going to put out soon, but every ABC commission that answered the survey said that all of them but one, actually. There was one that said that they would sanction it, but only if there was further medical testing. We're talking about the Hag fight. So every other commission said, no, we wouldn't have sanctioned it whatsoever. And, you know, at the ABC convention, there was actually the MMA database keeper, a man named Kirk Jeunesse, who's, I quoted in my story, he's a very respected official, referee, a judge. And he keeps all of the suspensions and all of the records. Well, he was one of the ones that was concerned because Pat Reed did not register two sets of suspensions. And the other thing is that I found out today just from looking through my notes is that the Marsh's issues go far beyond that because he was actually on one of those cards that was never listed. So that suspension should still be on from 2016. So there are two times that suspensions were overlooked because, one, Pat Reed did not register it. Two, he just didn't look at the database or didn't care. So they're using the boxing MMA thing. Well, the one that I found today was an MMA one. So he's going to have to come up with a different alibi there because there are two MMA shows in a row that he fought on that he should have been suspended for. So, you know, I don't know what the end game is. I know that the UFC apparently could bring them as much as $200,000 in revenue for the commission just for the gate at the 5% that they take. So, you know, for $200,000, I think that's a pretty huge trade-off that it's making it look like the city's ethics and the city's responsibility to its citizens. Because Tim, you know, he was from Boyle. He lived in Edmonton since he graduated from university, and he went to U of A. So he's an Edmonton boy. I think, you know, the points here is, why are we protecting one Edmonton boy who Pat Reed, you know, is the one that seems to be protected, and it's in place of another one? And I think it comes down to fiscal, you know, it's a monetary thing, because we know, you know, all of the counselors offered to take a pay cut, you know, and we've got, you know, different issues where there hasn't been the money. Well, they just got another $95,000 in December added to the budget to cover Pat Reed's salary for another year because they're having financial issues again because they're not getting the people coming in for shows because of the reputation of the Edmonton Commission.
But where do you think it goes from here? For the Edmonton Combative Sports Commission, and having talked to the president of the ABC, who oversees all of them, if they don't change this or alter it, what can happen to the Edmonton Combative Sports Commission? Because they still have to fall under the window of ABC, do they not?
They have to. And there are quotes that I've posted in some of the stories that I've written where Pat Reed was, you know, said some pretty disparaging things about the ABC. Which was, when I started making complaints to Edmonton, they wanted a copy of my entire recording because apparently Pat Reed probably told them that I had some things that he said about certain parties and wasn't, you know, he let on that he didn't know that I was recording him, but he was giving me quotes and I told him that I was, you know, it was an interview. So we'll leave it at that. I did what I had to do to protect myself from quoting him properly. So he gave me exact quotes, and then he went, you know, there were some things that he said that I still haven't posted about, you know, about the UFC that was disparaging, and about, I don't know why. I was the first time we spoke, and he went off on people that he didn't know, you know, about Americans, and about, it was a very strange rant to be getting from a regulator following an event that I called for quotes for a story. So, you know, I don't know. I think one thing is that they're overlooking is that if they don't change their tune on all of these rules that they're kind of manipulating, the ABC could suspend their membership with the ABC. So, you know, they may say that they don't need the ABC, but what that does is that would make every event then that Edmonton sanctions a non-sanctioned fight in the eyes of the ABC, meaning that if the UFC came here, it would be like the equivalent of them going and fighting on like a, you know, so you see some of these fights on reserves, or you see some of these fights that, you know, people have in like a bar that's an illegal fight. It's like a smoker or whatever. And that's what it would fall under. So there's a lot riding on them kind of following the rules here. But, you know, I think they're cutting off their nose to spite their face in a lot of ways to kind of save. I guess the lawsuit is something that's probably in the forefront of their minds, because number one, I've been told now everybody from the city of Edmonton has been told not to talk to me. So, you know, there's a reason why, and I know that maybe they don't like the fact that I'm in your face and telling you what is what, but my number one goal here, and I've told everybody from the city and everybody from council that I've offered information to that has refused it, that, you know, I'm here to help, and I'm an unbiased person because I'm not from Edmonton. You know, I've got no real dog in this fight other than I'm a longtime journalist and I'm a longtime mixed martial arts and combat sports stakeholder. And I think that, you know, more people need to maybe help with a little bit of the lifting, because it's one of those stories, I think, that doesn't bring a lot of hits. So there's a lot of mainstream combat sports media that isn't really touching it. We're getting more mainstream help on this, I think, than we are from the combat sports community. And that's disappointing.
Mike, as always, I appreciate it. Keep digging, keep working on it. I enjoy your stuff. And Eric's story was great as well. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, man. We'll talk soon.
Mike Russell from RealFightStories.com.